All right, so we are in BPOS World MS Online. Who are you?
So, Aaron Kelly. I run product management for the Microsoft Online and BPOS teams. And really, I started on this business about 4 years ago. So, when it was, you know, PowerPoint slides and Excel spreadsheets.
Nice.
That's when I started working on this and helping us get to where we are today. So it's been quite a journey.
Absolutely. Well, let's talk a little bit about where are we today.
Yeah. So it's actually an incredibly exciting time. As we think about the mission of the group, it's about leading the transformation of Microsoft from a software business to an online or a services business. And so we're what I'll call we're in stage two or getting ready for stage two as we deliver Wave 14 services that are really that next generation of online experience for our customers. And so that's very cool. Right now we're in generation one, a lot of great feedback, a lot of great growth really in the business, which one of the things that's been really surprising for me has been it's the first time that I can think of where we've exceeded our targets in the first half of the fiscal year by so much that the field actually asked for higher targets in H2. Because they really want to run hard at this and have a really big impact with online. So that's very, very exciting to be part of that and kind of help that transformation along. And the online muscle is starting to build in the company and in our ecosystem. So partners are another area of really rapid and exciting growth for the business. If I think back to 2 years ago when we first announced BPOS and Microsoft Online Services, at Worldwide Partner Conference, there was frankly a lot of skepticism around what was the partner's role going to be, how are they going to make money, you know, what does this mean with Microsoft going getting into the services business. And I can, you know, happily say that here 2 years later, we've got, you know, a huge number of partners that have signed agreements and are actively selling, thousands of partners. We have a very, very large percentage of our internal targets are driven by partners. So we have a metric that we measure our success on called a customer add. And so every customer that we add, we kind of count that. And 70% of those customer adds are driven by partners. So they're really having a big impact on our business. And they're starting to make a lot of money around it as well. And so our core set of partners today are advisor partners, where they go, they have a conversation with the customer about BPOS or online, and then they help influence and drive the sale. Microsoft does the billing so the partner doesn't have to, and then we pay the partner advisory fees for that relationship. And so partners are not only making money there, but they're layering on top of that their own services to help customers take advantage of BPOS. Partners are really starting to see a lot of profitability around that. So that's pretty exciting. And that's one model. That's our advisor model. The other model that's a little bit less mature, but it's starting to develop, is what we call a syndication model, where we syndicate our service through a telco and deliver it in market. And we've launched with Telstra in Australia, and then we have Vodafone in both Germany and in Spain, where we're starting to sell a combination of a Vodafone service and a BPOS. And so that's also pretty exciting to see that start to land and start to build some momentum. It's still in its infancy, but we really see the telcos becoming the, to use a Microsoft term, OEMs of the software plus services world. So really an interesting space to kind of see us go.
Now, I mean, you mentioned 4 years, so you've been here since pretty much the lifetime of this specific project.
Yep.
Think about, like, I mean, where we are today, you just mentioned, your vision from 4 years ago. How close, how far off is it? What's going on?
Yeah, you know, it's really funny that you asked that question, because I think it was about 6 months ago for one of our monthly business reviews, we pulled out the slides from the very first review we did, and we looked at it, and we tried to say, hey, how close are we to what we said 3.5 years ago? And it turns out that all the things that we were thinking about and working on then are things that we've either finished or we're still working on because they had long lead time or were important. And so I really think one of a testimony to sort of the team and the people on the team has been focused. It's been focused on that end state. Focus on driving the transformation, not just for Exchange and for SharePoint, but for the company by delivering an online platform that not only we've leveraged with BPOS, but the Azure team is leveraged with Windows Azure, and the Office team will leverage in the future as we release Office web apps and other solutions on that platform. So it's actually pretty interesting to go back and look at where we started and what we were trying to do and what we've accomplished. And I think we've made progress because we've stayed true to our core principles, we've stayed true to our strategy, and continued to have kind of that laser focus on the future. And we haven't been distracted by deals with this company or deals here or deals here or deals here or some kind of change in strategy. We've really been able to stay focused. So that's been interesting as well.
So now when I talked to Ron Markovich,
yep,
he had mentioned that, you know, Bill and Steve pretty much made a bet on cloud computing 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
What I would ask you is, I was reading this article today. This is random, but that's okay because this is Channel 9. We can converse, and you're the right person to talk to.
Cool.
It seems like there's a almost a bipolar nature in some sense, because the things that make Microsoft money is traditional software. Mm-hmm. That's what makes us money today.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're saying is we're going to bet on the non-traditional model, which is, you know, hosted services, cloud computing, etc. What's going on there? You're a business guy. Talk to me, man.
Yeah.
When you, you know, I read that article today, and I was like, that's an interesting perspective.
Yeah, totally. So you're actually highlighting one of the first and most important issues that we had to tackle with internally, mm-hmm. as well as within the company, to help understand what are the economics of the online world. So I think back to that first presentation to Jeff Rakes where we were trying to get approval to fund the project, and just goes back a while.
Mm.
And the, one of the core elements of that presentation was the value prop from an economics perspective. And what I mean by that is, if you take Exchange as an example, Exchange TCO for a customer to run Exchange is anywhere from $10, $12 to $18 a user a month, depending on what analyst report you look at or what TCO tool you look at. But it's very much north of $10 a user a month. If we look at the price point of Exchange Online today, it's $5 a user a month. So for customers, almost immediately, they'll see a 50% savings when they go to Exchange Online from what they could traditionally do on premises.
Mm.
So from that sense, there's great value for customers. Now, when we think about it from a Microsoft perspective, our COGS are much lower than $5 a user a month. So we actually drive equivalent or in some cases even more profit dollars than we do with our software. And that comes in several forms. One, it's annuity-based model. So customers who are subscribing to Exchange Online are paying us every month, and so that's a nice kind of profit stream that we can look at. There's also a better connection with our customers, and so that we see a lot of value in that from things like upsell and cross-sell. Mm-hmm. So there's very interesting economics that are beneficial both to the customer and pretty significant TCO cost savings, and to Microsoft in the form of annuity revenue streams that we don't necessarily have with our software business. And so landing those economics was really important internally to get us off the ground and get us started, because it is hard at a company like Microsoft that has, you know, probably two or three of the most successful businesses of all time,
yeah,
to say, hey, we've got to change that now because the model has changed or the industry has changed. And what I would say is it's a testament to you know, Bill and Steve and our leadership to recognize that as good as we've been, we can still get better, and there's changes that we need to look at.
Interesting. Very, very interesting. And again, as we've talked a lot about with all the people who've gone around and talked to, I'm going to point at that cool thing right there. that definitely is something.
That's one of our...
we take that on, don't we?
That's right. And, you know, that was something we never shipped,
okay,
if you will. But it was an early prototype of... when we announced the beta of BPOS at the SharePoint conference, I guess it was, when was it, 06, that was one of the early things we thought we'd put on everyone's chair.
Yeah.
And it was kind of a joke, but...
Sure. Well, it certainly is a joke.
Yes.
So everyone out there can understand it.
That's right. It's a joke. Joke.
Playing.
But it was...
You do take a lot of the headache away by not having to run your own Exchange.
Well, I mean, it's you know, it's amazing. I think a lot of people think in terms of economies of scale. Oh, okay, Microsoft's got big data centers and they've got big power plants, and so they're, you know, the economics work because of scale. But it's also skill. So economies of skill is a really critical element that customers capitalize on and we can leverage. Because now we have the developer that wrote the code for the original product is then making sure that it's running right in the data center. And some of the folks in our operations teams are just world-class technologists and operators. And so for even the large enterprise, they're going to benefit from those individuals' skill and ability. But certainly in a mid-market customer, they'd never be able to afford or attract the kind of technical talent that we have running these services. And so we can now leverage that human IP across thousands of customers to everyone's benefit. And so economies of scale and economies of skill are the benefit of the service. And you as a customer get to focus on things that are more critical to your business. I hear that time and time again from a large enterprise customer or mid-market customer. And they always tell me, Exchange and SharePoint, these are mission-critical applications that I have to have and they have to run. Mm-hmm. But I don't use them to differentiate from my competition because they're not necessarily specific to financial services or to automotive or to manufacturing or to pharma. But I got to have them, and I got to have them at the highest, latest versions and deliver it at a very high SLA. That is differentiating if my competitor doesn't have it. But I would rather invest my internal resources on applications that are very specific to my business vertical. Mm-hmm. And so that's another element of the value prop.
Interesting. Let me, so one of the things, as we are so focused now, and Ballmer said we're all in.
That's right.
At the University of Washington, which isn't far mm-hmm. from here. One of the things I would ask you is, I mean, most people out in the Channel 9 audience are very smart people, right? They're developers, engineers, yeah. architects, students. Mm-hmm. What I would ask is, I mean, latency is a physics problem.
Yes.
And I would argue that connectivity to the internet is nowhere near the ubiquity of electricity in people's homes. Mm-hmm. And so how do you sort of reason and rationalize moving everything up into sort of this distributed vapor mm-hmm. that requires an internet connection to be useful?
Yeah.
And the traditional stuff. So, I mean, we say we're all in, but it doesn't mean that we forgot about our foundation.
Yeah.
And the fact that people need offline computing, and mm-hmm. as Ozzie says, his terminology is occasionally connected computing.
That's right.
So talk to me about how you think about that.
Well, so the way I think a lot about that is a customer's experience or a user's experience, more specifically, needs to be consistent regardless of their connectivity profile or what they're doing. So this concept of three screens in a cloud, your PC, your browser, and your mobile device, any one of those three interfaces I could be using, and I want my experience to be consistent regardless of which one I am, anywhere, anytime, any place. And so as I think about Exchange and Outlook as an example, when I have a PC with me that's my PC that has Outlook on it, that's my preferred email calendaring collaboration experience, because I can take advantage of the local computing power of my PC. It's fast, it's performant, I can do a lot of things in the window. I can put it up on multiple screens and really kind of power through email and use that as a great collaboration tool. And I can also use that when I'm offline. So I may be offline, I may be on a plane, and I want to take advantage of being productive, and Outlook does a great job of allowing me to respond to a bunch of emails and deleting them. And the next time I sync up and with the rest of the world and get online, everything sort of disperses and my state's restored. Mm-hmm. Same thing is true in a browser. I may be at home, I may be at a kiosk, I may be at a friend's house or in someone else's office, and I need to get to a piece of email, and I just want to have access to that via browser. But when I land on that browser experience, I want it to be the same. I don't want to have a different way of organizing my mail. If I flag something or tag something in Outlook, I want that to show up in OWA. And so having that consistent experience is really important. It's a core element of our strategy that says even if it's fully cloud-based, it has to look like something that's a both software and services. And then, of course, that extends to the mobile device as well. In some cases, I may not have the PC form factor, but instead I have a mobile device. Again, I want my emails and my calendar items to be described and characterized in a very similar manner, so I don't have this huge context switch when I change devices. And so our strategy is all about ensuring that that user experience is consistent across those three screens. And in doing so, we create the best experience, the most productive experience, so that users aren't trying to navigate various devices, and instead they have it very, very consistent. And the cloud represents a very central repository of all that data, state, process, that allows you then to really float and roam anywhere and interact in a very consistent manner. So that's why we would say, yeah, if there's internet there, it's great. If there isn't, you can still be really productive.
Certainly. Now, what keeps you up at night? Specific to, you know, your world.
I think the biggest thing that keeps me up at night is just not moving fast enough. As fast as we're moving, as much as we've changed in the last two years, it's still, you know, there's still greater and greater demand on what we're doing. There's more and more customers that want to sign up. There's a level of innovation that we still need to push and drive. But what is exciting about that is the muscle that we've developed within our engineering teams to deliver features now on a much faster cadence than we've ever done before. So a lot of people will classify Microsoft as, you know, it's 3 years between edition releases, and so that's how long you've got to wait. And what we found over the last 2 years with online is, in fact, we're releasing features every 60 to 90 days. And this rhythm of the service creates this wonderful real-time feedback loop where customers and partners can give us feedback. We prioritize that feedback with our engineering team. And then we drive what we call a 6 to 8 week dev sprint, where we sprint to deliver those features in the service and then release them once every 60, 90 days. And so if I look back over the last 18 months, it's pretty amazing when you look at that chart to see how every 2-3 months there's a block of significant features that are landing that improve the service experience, from increasing the mailbox size to turning on journaling for Exchange so you can use an on-premises archive with Exchange Online, to increasing the upload rates for SharePoint Online, or adding new features that support different client types or the Mac platform, et cetera, et cetera. And so it's really been an invigorating transformation that's happened within our engineering teams and in our product management teams to adjust to this faster cycle. But even given that, I wish we could move even faster, and I wish we were moving faster across all of our properties in the company. But we are moving. We have a clear destination where every product has a cloud element to it, as Steve talked about the other week. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to get there as quickly as we can, but we're going to do so in a way that's very responsible and respectful of the needs of an enterprise or an organization. I mean, as quickly as we're able to release features every 60 to 90 days, one of the things that we do for customers is when we have a major release, so a big version change, which we'll have coming up, we give customers the choice as to when they want to take advantage of that new version. Mm-hmm. So we're not jamming significant end user change on them in the spirit of rapid innovation. Instead, we say, hey, here's the next version of BPOS. It's got all the 2010 server infrastructure as part of it. You know what? There's UI changes for your end users. There's significant UI changes to SharePoint, which is, we think is great, but it can also be disruptive. And so we give you up to a year to take on that new version as a customer and migrate to it. And we think things like that really do set us apart from many of the other competitors in the space, because we really understand and we're implementing the needs of IT or an organization while at the same time driving rapid innovation.
Excellent. I wish we could do the same thing with IE6.
Yeah, that's right.
You've been hearing, you know, poor Dean's getting hammered with that. You know,
yeah.
Let me just get rid of it. But
yeah,
that's a really interesting point that you bring up. I mean,
yeah,
one of the value adds for this thing, and people on Channel 9 have been following these videos, is that rapid release of versions and new features is not something we necessarily, I wouldn't say pimp, mm-hmm. but it's not something we necessarily push. out there very much. So people, I think that's a great thing. I just wanted to reiterate what
you
said.
Yeah, it's an important element of, as we've thought about the cloud, we definitely think about it as the, you know, the next generation computing platform, and Windows Azure represents like the big bet there for us, and everyone's going to move to Azure, and we're all very excited about that. But at the same time, as we do that movement, we're very respectful of our history and of customer needs in the enterprise space and how they recognize that, hey, you know what, I'm in retail. And guess what? I don't want you changing anything starting in the middle of October through the holidays, because the last thing I want to do is disrupt my end users during the most important part of my year. And so we get that. We've heard that feedback. And so we've designed our approach to meet those needs as well.
Excellent. And early on, you mentioned partners.
Yes.
And I don't think most people realize that what you were talking about was essentially, we have OEM, quote-unquote, partnerships with other companies that actually sell BPOS to other companies. And that, so I think that's an interesting model versus in the traditional world, an OEM would be somebody that actually, I shouldn't say OEM, but like an ISV or partner, is somebody that would develop on our platform and therefore evangelize the benefits of our platform because they built their business on top of it.
Yeah.
So it's definitely a kind of a mind shift. Do you have that type of relationship where you have, if I'm at a small ISV and I've built my server infrastructure on top of your hosted services, and then I evangelize that to people, is that one way of making money?
Yeah. So you highlighted on another partner opportunity that I didn't talk about earlier, but love to spend a few minutes on now, and that is the opportunity to really develop and build on top of or leverage the infrastructure that we've developed from a platform perspective. And what we've done to date with Exchange Online and SharePoint Online, for example, is we've exposed the web services APIs that those products use. And what that allows you to do is either as an ISV or even an end customer, it's to start to take advantage of those APIs in whatever solution you may be designing. And so one of my favorite examples of this, because it's a great sort of cloud Microsoft platform story, is there's an SI SharePoint partner in the Denver area, Statera. And they actually have offices across the U.S. But what they did is very simply took advantage of the web services APIs that we expose in SharePoint Online and those that we expose in CRM Online, and then they use the Windows Azure Development Platform to create a solution for customers that allows you to surface, say, a document library that's hosted in SharePoint in a CRM Online interface. So if you're a sales rep and you're going through your monthly quota or your customer accounts and you want to very quickly pull up a product documentation or something, you can do that through CRM. And at the same time, if you're a manager and you're trying to look at your sales figures or track pipeline progress, and you want to do that through a BI-type dashboard in SharePoint Online, you can do the same thing. And what they've done is they've taken advantage of what we've exposed and the Azure Development Platform to connect those two online services and create a more complete solution for customers. And we're seeing many, many more examples of that as partners who really understand our on-premises business and those products, and they just think, how can I take this to the cloud?
Excellent.
And you can't do it all today, but we're very quickly iterating, again, as I said, to add more and more capability, not only features that an end customer could take advantage of, but capabilities that partners could leverage. So another example is for partners that are selling our services alongside theirs, we've recently launched in December some new features that allow them to then administer the service on behalf of a customer. And that's actually a really powerful feature when it comes to driving scale for partners. So the way BPOS works today is you sell the solution to an end customer. The customer has an admin portal where they can go in and add users and deploy directory services and, you know, add mailbox domains and add site collections and build SharePoint sites and do all the things you'd expect. But that's very much, historically, it was very much very customer specific. So if a partner wanted to help out, they'd have to get username and login from each of their customers and separately log into each of their of those portals to do the work. Well, now what we've enabled is admin on behalf. So now what happens is a customer simply says, yeah, I approve that, you know, my partner A can admin on behalf of me. There's a very, you know, simple but secure kind of handoff where they make that approval. And now the partner can go into their partner portal. They can search on that customer and pull up that customer's environment and just do the administration as if they were the customer from anywhere on the web. And so it's really a powerful investment that we've made to help partners scale their business, not only in selling and in developing solutions, but also in helping service and support customers. So again, as you think about that mid-market customer of a few hundred users who needs the capability but doesn't have the skills or the time to do it themselves, partners can now do that at scale, and we think there's a great value proposition there for all parties involved. And so those are key parts of our investments that may not be features, but they're investments in the overall ecosystem.
Excellent. And it is the ecosystem of engineers and you know, software developers that has made Microsoft successful.
And it will continue
so
to be.
It's great to see this.
Yep.
So essentially mashing up services and being very creative and developing their own partnerships with people. I really like that model. It certainly can scale.
Yeah.
The question is, as we get more and more people on MS Online, at some point we have to do this. BPOS is Business Productivity Online Suite.
Yes.
It's a group of hosted services.
Yes.
Microsoft Online is the broader sort of our online presence. So what I mean by that is, will you tell us the exact difference between these two things?
Sure.
To make it clear.
Yeah, absolutely. This is a question I get all the time. And it's, hey, what's the difference between Microsoft Online Services and BPOS?
Yes.
And they kind of look and feel one and the same today because of where we started and where we've been. And so you've characterized it well. Microsoft Online Services is the technology platform and the initiative to basically transform all of our software businesses into subscription businesses for organizations and businesses, right? That's the initiative. It's the technology platform that enables it. And that's the main thrust of what our group is about. Now, we chose what we call our first anchor service to be one that focuses on business productivity for two core reasons. One, email and collaboration and conferencing and IM and presence, those business productivity workloads or communication and collaboration workloads, those are universally applicable across verticals. So people in FinServe need that, just like people in pharma need those tools, just like people in manufacturing. So there wasn't a vertical niche associated with it. It was very horizontal. And then once you double-click into a company, those services are also broadly applicable for every user in an organization. Now, not every user has email today, but more and more we're seeing that. And we've tried to implement that with some of our solutions. So we started with the technologies that make up BPOS, because it was broadly applicable across verticals and it was broadly applicable within a company across all users. And we really see that as our anchor service, that customers will start with that, and then as other things come along like CRM or Azure or System Center Online or these other solutions, they will just sort of layer on and complement what's already been established. And Microsoft Online becomes that broad platform that all of our services take advantage of internally, and then customers can have a consistent interaction with Microsoft, and partners can have a consistent interaction with Microsoft. So things like the admin portal that I just described, architecting that away in such a way that there's not a different one for every application, but instead it's one that spans all of our applications, makes partners' lives easier, makes our customers' lives easier, and frankly makes our lives a lot easier because we're not reinventing the same infrastructure for every new service we bring to market.
Excellent. And so let's talk a little bit about, as we wind down, the, you know, sort of the future.
Yeah.
And what we can talk about. What's going on?
This is where I get in trouble.
Yeah, exactly. But try not to get in trouble.
Yeah, I'll try my best. Now, the future is really exciting. Mm-hmm. And as we think about our immediate future towards the end of the calendar year, it's about delivering new platform capabilities. It's about simplifying the UI for admins. It's about providing scripting and API access to our platform, so now customers can deploy seats and deploy users, you know, using software and scripting as opposed to using the UI. So there's a lot of power, things that we get excited about there. It's about new versions of the service. It's about new services. We've talked a lot about Office Web Apps. We've talked about System Center Online. These are brand new services that we didn't have, we don't have today, that are coming.
Cool.
And that gets pretty exciting. When I start to go on beyond that, we're very much thinking about not only what other services can we bring to market through an online environment, but what are some of the scenarios that we can start to enable because more and more of our customers are online. And so there's some really interesting things there that we're looking at and thinking about, like inter-organizational collaboration and other scenarios like that that become pretty exciting. Continuing to invest a lot in partners and how partners can more readily integrate into our experience and take advantage of some of core infrastructure things that we've done, like provisioning and identity and commerce in a more scalable way. So partners can focus on their unique IP that they create and worry a little bit less about those infrastructure or platform type investments that we're pretty focused on with things like Windows Azure and some of the online elements. So that's sort of a teaser of some of the things that we're thinking about and working on. We're very excited about this calendar year and what we're going to bring to market. And then just there's just a huge, massive work that we're going to keep doing to help our customers and really further include in our partner community.
Excellent. Well, hey, it's great to talk to you.
Let me cool, thank
before
you.
We wind this down, though. This is Channel 9.
That's right.
So what's your story? How long have you been working at Microsoft? I know you started on this project, but you have a window office.
Yeah.
That means you've been here longer than 4 years.
Yeah. So I've been at Microsoft for 9.5 years.
Okay.
When I started in 2000, I was the third product manager on the BizTalk server business before it launched.
Oh, BizTalk.
Yeah. So I started on BizTalk in the very early days, right before BizTalk 2000 came to market. Spent 4 years there. And so then in 2004, came over to the Exchange business, or the end of 2004, came over to the Exchange business, started working on hosted Exchange and some of the other elements, and then started really getting into the cloud then in that capacity, and then helped drive the acquisition of a company, FrontBridge, which became Forefront Online Protection from Exchange Now, which was sort of email, spam, and virus protection in the cloud, archiving in the cloud, et cetera. And that's kind of how I started on my cloud journey, and that was in August of 2005, and then since then have really just been focused on how do we drive the transformation within Microsoft, what are the next assets that we bring to market as services, and really learned a lot from that work with FrontBridge, ran the live meeting business for a while as part of that as well, which was a Placeware acquisition, so it was really involved kind of at the ground level on some of these early services, properties that came into Microsoft, and then have just been continuously really driving on that train. So it's really been an exciting time for me. It's almost a blur as I think back to, I can still remember flying down to Los Angeles to announce the acquisition of FrontBridge, you know, and it does actually seem like yesterday that we're doing that, and now here we are 4 years later with, you know, multiple products in market, north of 30 different countries, multiple currencies. Like, it's really pretty amazing. It's been Excellent. A crazy ride. It's been a lot of fun.
Well, ride on, man. That's
right.
All I can say.
Uh-huh.
Great to meet you. Great chatting with you.
Thank you.
And take care.
Appreciate it. Thanks, guys.
All right.